Who would have thought that a person from the projects that would stand in line and get free lunch because my mom couldn't afford to feed us would go around the world singing music to start a consumer electronics company so I could show the kids in my neighborhood that they should dream to be Steve Jobs, not just Stevie Wonder.
United Airlines pilots gave the thumbs up to a 2-year contract extension, which raises wages 22% by 2018.
The economy is certainly in a better shape. We have two big concerns. One is whether there is a deal to be had between the United Kingdom and other members of the European Union, which we hope very much because it would really be conducive to more stability and a more cohesive economic zone.
The expectation for Apple and the iPhone is always very high. Part of what I think is happening here is that investors are a little bit worried about whether Apple has another innovative hit product after the iPhone.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10. Today is Monday. It's January 25th, 2016. Welcome to another work week. We know who's going to be in the Super Bowl now, so we can make our bets on that. The storm is over out east. The snow is all gone. It's time to clean that up. And believe it or not, spring is right around the corner. We're halfway through winter, more than halfway through winter, so there's lots to be positive about today. And guess what? The markets are not tanking overseas as they have been the last couple of Monday mornings. Asian stocks rose today as oil rebounded from 12-year lows, and expectations of monetary stimulus in both Europe and Japan have shored up sentiment after a 3-week sell-off in global markets, the worst start of the new year on the markets in recent memory, if not ever. Investigators were encouraged by a 9% jump in U.S. crude on Friday, which was partly related to that massive winter storm out east, but handed U.S. shares their biggest single-day gain in more than a month. That advance, combined with smaller increases the day before, gave the market actually a weekly gain despite all the big downs through the week. After 3 weeks of declines, the Dow Jones Industrials on Friday rose 210 points. The NASDAQ Composite was up about 119, and the S&P 500 gained about 37 points. Overseas last night, Japan trade data for December released today shows that exports fell for 3 straight months, though imports fell at faster pace. Thanks to a collapse in oil prices, the price of oil this morning, by the way, is $32.50 a barrel. The dollar weakened against the yen and the euro. Here's where the markets stand right now overseas on the European markets this morning. The FTSE is up 211 point. In Asia, the Nikkei up 152. The Hang Seng overnight up 259. The Shanghai up 22. The Sensex up 50. Market futures here in the United States are lower by about 40 points. They were a bit lower earlier, much lower earlier, indicating an open on the Dow that will be lower. The S&P futures also lower by about 3 points. The other big market business and financial news everyone is talking about today is Twitter. What's going on at Twitter? Their shares are trading lower in pre-market trading this morning by about 2%. This follows an exit at the top of at least four of the chief executive officer, Jack Dorsey's top level executives. He actually went on Twitter last night to release a statement to say why they're leaving, trying to sort of head off any kind of controversy about why they might be departing. But it is odd that four of the top executives are leaving that company, and the investors are reacting today very negatively. Again, in pre-market trading, Twitter shares are down about 2%. We'll see what's going to happen there later on this morning. Also this morning, you heard there in the opening montage some of the people who were at the Davos Festival in Switzerland, the Economic Forum, the World Economic Forum, which concluded over the weekend. They ended on a positive note talking about the outlook for the global economy. They've been looking at ways and solutions to try to get that under control and also to move forward with what they're calling the fourth industrial revolution. We'll have more on that coming up later in the hour. We'll also talk to correspondent Jim Ryan about vacation time, how many people actually take their vacation. You'll be surprised to learn that. And innovation is on our agenda this morning as well. Let's bring in, I should say, to our discussion this morning, Betsy Oppitt, who is one of the people who've had an idea and put it to market, and not just any market, Whole Foods. Good morning, Betsy. How are you?
How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for being with us on the opening bell this morning. We're going to talk further after we do traffic here, but I want to sort of have you set the scene just a bit for what your item is. Make our mouth water and tell us where you put it.
Okay. I make the most absolutely delicious gourmet nut and seed butters, and actually yesterday being National Peanut Butter Day, we make a peanut butter, almond butter, sunflower seed, and cashew butter with some very unique ingredients.
And you got them in a pretty big store.
We were very lucky. We went from farmer's market right into Whole Foods. We're in the south, in the Florida region at the moment. We're in over 250 stores. Between California, the Carolinas, and Florida, and we're growing pretty quick.
Well, coming up after the break, after traffic, we're going to talk to you about how you did it, what advice you'd have for other people, and when we can taste some of these, because they sound absolutely delicious. We'll talk to Betsy coming up. Betsy Oppitt right after traffic. Here's Mary Vandeville. Good morning, Mary.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. After a rally on Friday, U.S. crude was down $1.10 to $31.09 per barrel in electronic trading, and Friday's rally on Wall Street might have had a short life as well. Futures point to a lower opening for the Dow's and the S&P 500. Business economists are more pessimistic about their own company's future sales and profits than they were last fall, and more predict slower economic growth through the rest of this year. At the same time, a survey by the National Association for Business Economics shows most firms planning to raise wages in the first quarter. The weekend blizzard along the East Coast could have a relatively small economic impact, up to $850 million. Because the storm hit on a weekend, there weren't any major power outages. Experts say that meant little lost productivity. Hilton is launching a new hotel brand focusing on budget travelers looking to spend $75 to $90 a night. The new brand, called True, aims to compete with economy and mid-scale chains like Comfort Inn, Fairfield Inn, and La Quinta. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program, 520, and it's time to get up and get moving this morning. We're talking with Betsy Oppitt, who is the founder and CEO of Betsy's Best. You can find her online, betsysbest.com. And we were talking before the break, Betsy, about how you've been successful and moved this product actually into Whole Foods in the Florida area. Mm-hmm. Any plans to expand nationwide, or are you already doing that?
We are absolutely in pursuit of that. I'm actually up in Chicago today working on some local groceries here in this Chicago area. We are working on Whole Foods South Pacific, as well as a full wide nationwide launch through hopefully Whole Foods, as well as the various other stores. So we hope to be coast to coast by the end of this year.
This is gourmet peanut butter in the sense that it has some gourmet ingredients, but they're all natural ingredients. Is that the secret to your success with this product? Is it? I haven't tasted it, but it looks delicious.
It is. It's very unique in its own, and I crafted together these unique ingredients. Being the fact that I'm a dietitian, I was very careful as to what I put in. I did a lot of research behind the ingredients, making sure that they not only had a great taste and flavor, but they had a function for your body. So they provide you with additional benefits of vitamins, minerals, fiber, calcium. So it's a unique flavor. Like I said, it has, I didn't mention this, it has cinnamon in it. And my cashew butter has a cardamom. So we chose unique spices that give a wonderful flavor with a nice chia seed crunch to it. So it's fantastic. And we'll have to get you some butter so you can try it.
One of our themes here on the opening bell is innovation and startups, trying to give especially small businesses that spark or at least an idea of how to move forward. Can you give any advice about how you've done that, how you've gotten into Whole Foods?
I think it's just always behind an entrepreneur's passion. And I've always loved what I do. I mean, being a dietitian, I just absolutely love working with people. But I've always been crafty in my kitchen. And I think it's just a true passion that comes through, wanting to provide something that's of quality. And the fact that there's a lot of thought that went behind it. So I think for any entrepreneur, anyone wanting to grow a business, as long as you love what you do, it's not work, it's fun. I think that always makes a difference.
people, I actually was going through some of your biography information, and I don't want to embarrass you at all, but people have called you Betsy Crocker all of your life, haven't they?
Absolutely, yes. Even back in my sorority days, I would come in with the bread basket, and I just always loved cooking for people and always putting a healthy twist to it so that you wouldn't sacrifice taste for health.
You know, I asked you what your steps were to get to where you are, but what sort of headaches and roadblocks did you have to overcome, and what advice would you give entrepreneurs about that?
Yeah, I think the hardest thing starting a business is, number one, I've never done anything in the food industry. Being a dietitian, I didn't know the first thing about co-packers and manufacturing and, you know, a lot of the regulations that they have. It's taken a lot of, you know, twists and turns and unexpected, events to come along. I think the hardest challenge is, you know, sometimes being a small company, you have a lot of doors shut in your face. Just because sometimes, you know, co-packers and people like that don't want to risk and take a chance on a small company. But when you believe in it 100% and you're there and you don't stop and you don't take no as the first answer, I think that's how you pursue forward. And when we got our Whole Foods account, I mean, literally, we had never been in a grocery store. Our only store was a farmer's market. So for them to take a chance on us, being a very, very, very small startup and giving us, you know, the whole region of Florida, was a huge opportunity. And we proved to them that we could do it because we stood behind our product. And we, I believe, are one of the number one selling gourmet nut butters in the Florida region at the moment.
And so when the advice would be then, when you do get a door shut in your face, don't stay in your pajamas and eat peanut butter all morning.
Absolutely.
Get back up and keep moving.
Absolutely. Yep.
Betsy, thank you for being with us. Betsy's Best is where you'll find her online, betsysbest.com, in Whole Foods in Florida, and maybe perhaps soon Chicago will be optimistic for you. Betsy Oppett, thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you so much. Enjoy your day.
You too, and good luck. Again, it's betsysbest.com. Coming up in just a few minutes here on the Opening Bell, we're going to talk to correspondent Jim Ryan about vacation. There's a new survey out, and that survey has to do with how many people take their vacations in America. You'll never guess what the percentage is. There's actually a survey out that shows this, and shows also how we compare to other countries. We'll have that. Also coming up, we'll take you back to Switzerland and give you some of the highlights of the World Economic Forum in Davos. And Dave Ennett is here. Dave, just before you came in here, I had a computer freeze right in the middle of an interview, and I was trying to find information, devices, computers. This happened yesterday on the field, didn't it?
It did, and it happened in the first half of the AFC Championship game, Steve, where the tablets that the teams use on the sidelines, which are connected via private Wi-Fi networks and allow communication between the booth upstairs, the coach's booth upstairs, and the sideline, the New England Patriots tablets were offline, or they just weren't working for about 20 minutes is what they say. And so they were, at least for those 20 minutes or so, at a disadvantage, but the Denver Broncos tablets on the other sideline were working. Now, these are used to actually, what they'll do is they'll send down pictures so the players and the coaches on the sideline can see an overhead view and try to analyze coverages and break things down. I mean, they used to do this with Polaroid pictures. Something new, and they would literally run them downstairs to the sidelines. Obviously, those days are long gone. But when this went out, the Broncos were able to continue to use theirs while the Patriots were just out of luck.
Two things immediately come to mind. One, mm-hmm. the Patriots are involved. Is anybody asking any questions about that? And two, Microsoft is really getting a lot of heck over this, aren't they?
Well, except at this point, the Patriots appear to have been the victims, not the perpetrators. Right. And as far as Microsoft, they've said it wasn't the tablets. It was a connectivity issue.
Okay.
Because otherwise, Denver would not have still had use of their tablets. And these are on secure networks. They are not, these tablets, by the way, they only have one app.
Okay.
It's only for the photo sharing. They can't go on Twitter or Facebook or anything like that from these tablets. So this has been a big partnership between Microsoft and the NFL. I think it's in its second year, and it's not exactly the kind of publicity Microsoft wanted, but it sounds, from what they're saying, it wasn't really their fault.
Yeah, and just quickly looking up a trend here on Twitter, somebody's written here, karma is a B.I.,
Yeah.
So did it impact the game real quick? We just have a few seconds.
I don't know, because, again, they were trailing at that point. I think it was 7-6 when the tablets went out, and I don't think it ultimately determined why it wasn't the reason they lost the game. But it is interesting, because when phones go out between the coach's booth and the sidelines, if one team loses phone communication, the other team has to turn off their phones. Mm-hmm. They can't use them until their service is restored. That was not the rule in this case.
Well, something tells me we haven't heard the last of this morning. Dave Ennett with us. He'll be along with sports throughout the morning, both here and on the Steve Cochran Show. Stick around. Vic Vaughn's coming up with the news next, and then we will have more about the opening bell and vacations next. It's 528.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:38. Welcome back to the program. Even as researchers emphasize all the benefits of rest, a new survey is suggesting few of us are actually taking breaks from work. Those of us here in the Midwest are the least likely to take vacations, while residents of the Northeast and the West are the most likely to take time off. The travel industry company called Skift surveyed about 2,000 people about their work habits and vacation habits, and the survey has found some surprising data about how much of us are actually taking time off. Correspondent Jim Ryan is with us on the opening bell this morning from Dallas. Jim, why are so few of us taking vacations?
Well, in some cases, Steve, the companies aren't offering vacation. You know, as benefits have dwindled in the last few years, insurance falling off, days off have come with it. And some companies just don't offer it. Others, though, even if they do offer those days off, some people just aren't able to take their vacation. Either they're too busy, they are concerned that if they go away on vacation, they'll come back and find that maybe their job doesn't exist anymore. But 41% of Americans say they didn't take a single day of vacation during 2015. That's about the same as 2014. The numbers have remained pretty steady, Steve.
From looking at the rest of the world, we're sort of unique in this area. Other people in other parts of the world take their vacations. Why don't we do that? I mean, you mentioned a couple of the reasons. Is our thinking going to change anytime soon?
Well, you know, it might. I think we're somewhere in the middle. If you look at a place like Japan, where people work 50, 60, even more hours per week, or a place like France, which has a 35-hour work week, we're kind of in the middle out there. But individually, I think there are people who, for various reasons, just don't take their time off. Women, for example, according to this survey by Skift, are less likely to take their time off. They're a little more overworked than men, but not by much. And interestingly, the Generation Z and the millennials, people who have sort of a reputation for kind of being slackers, they're the ones most overworked. 18 to 35, that age group, is the one least likely to take time off, even if it's offered.
Well, doesn't this have an impact on worker productivity? If you take a vacation, you take some time off, it recharges your batteries. Wouldn't companies be smart to force their employees to take time off and do that?
Yeah, you would think so. You're right. And I think from personal experience, anybody who's had a few days off to just chill, you know, disconnect for a while, you get back to work, you feel energized, you feel more alert, at least I do. And there are companies that are kind of recognizing that. There are seven big ones that have begun to offer at least some percentage of their employees unlimited vacation time. General Electric, Grant Thornton, the public accounting firm, Grubhub. Netflix is another company that's offering its people essentially all the vacation time that they need.
The survey also found there were some at the other end of the spectrum who took quite a bit of vacation.
Yeah, and those are the people, the 13% who took 20 days or more. Vacation time. That doesn't even take into account any personal time off or sick time or something like that. You look at incomes, and there is a connection there. The highest income Americans, according to the survey, take the most days off every year, while those at the opposite end of the income spectrum are the least likely to take time off.
How much did the people who are fighting now for a higher minimum wage and for better wages, I wonder how much of an impact they played on this study. Is it the people that are at that spectrum who are afraid that you mentioned earlier?
Well, yeah, you know, I think that it's people whose jobs maybe aren't as secure as other jobs, you know, or those who are working a couple of jobs out there. They're least likely, certainly, to take any time off because, for one thing, their vacations would have to coincide between these two, sometimes even three jobs. But yeah, I think you're right that if you're in that sort of unsecured job situation, you're much less inclined to risk taking some time off, even if it means being more productive when you get back.
You got a vacation plan soon? Where are you going?
Nowhere. I'll be in Iowa covering the caucuses there, then down to... I don't have any vacation time coming anytime soon, Steve.
Yeah, my first year here, too, at WG, and I don't get any vacation either, so I'm right there with you. So
it's a good thing we like what we do.
Correspondent Jim Ryan with us on the opening bell this morning from Dallas. Some other findings of the survey. Parents and their families have more trouble taking vacations than non-parents. Americans living in the country are the biggest group of no-takers on vacations compared to urban and suburban dwellers. You can find more on this survey at Skift, skift.com, S-K-I-F-T.com, and at Skift on Twitter. The World Economic Forum wrapped up over the weekend in Davos, Switzerland, ensuring that science can continue to address social challenges for the years ahead will require greater investments in basic research and better use of existing talents. That's one of the outcomes of the weekend event of the world's economic leaders. Elizabeth Blackburn, president of the Salk Institute for Biological Studies, says many scientists are increasingly frustrated because they're often rushed to complete their work.
You know, a 5-year period for someone to really run with a problem, that's the kind of thing that I think is needed. And it happens in certain settings. Certain countries are good at it. Certain agencies are good at it. But the temptation is always to make it shorter and shorter. And that really limits scientists. And what you see is frustration among scientists because they know they have to produce something smaller. And the milestones sometimes include publications which have been hastily produced because of the short time frames. So I'm saying let scientists have long leashes. Believe me, they won't go to the beach and waste the money. Scientists are passionate. They really will run with big problems if they're given the means of doing it.
And as the world deals with what is being called the fourth industrial revolution, a new age of interactive technologies, artificial intelligence, automation, robots, all of that stuff, has many in the world questioning whether or not we really will be able to master all of those technologies. Stanford Law Professor Henry Greeley says we all need to begin to understand and grapple with how these industries, these new technologies, shape our lives.
We're at an inflection point in humanity where it's really not clear what we're going to look like in 100 years. My professional interest in it from the law side is the great challenge of trying to figure out how to regulate these industries, both on the information technology side and on the bioscience side. And I think they need regulation because, like all technologies, they can be used for good things or for bad things. How do we regulate them in a way that doesn't stifle innovation, that maximizes their benefits but minimizes their harms, and maybe even more fundamentally, and go into the question of what it is to be human, how do we humans decide how we decide? Who gets to make the decisions about which technologies we're going to advance and which we aren't?
More than 2,500 leaders from business, government, international organizations, civil, academia, media, and the arts participated in the 46th World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. It's 5:45. This is the opening bell on WGN, and it's time for traffic. Here's Mary Vandeveld.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49. Welcome back to the program. Another big food company is going cage-free with eggs. Mondelez Elise International says it will use exclusively cage-free eggs in the U.S. and Canada by 2020 and in Europe by 2025. The Deerfield company makes Oreo cookies, Nabisco biscuits, Cadbury chocolates, and a bunch of other products, too. McDonald's is up next to go cage-free. Crane's reporter Peter Frost has been writing about this, and he is with us on the opening bell this morning. Peter, does this decision mean the floodgates are going to be opening in a big way when it comes to this cage-free arena?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think once a company the size of McDonald's makes its move, which it announced earlier just a few months ago, that they would phase them out within a decade or so. If once McDonald's makes a move, the entire supply chain changes. And so that paves the way for everyone else to be able to do this.
Give us a sense of how many eggs that McDonald's buys.
They buy 2 billion eggs a year in the United States alone. And, I mean, you know, they have 14,000 restaurants, a lot of people getting Egg McMuffins. So it's crazy. It's a crazy amount. And like I said, you know, once they decide to get the ball rolling, the whole supply chain has to change, right? Like, all the farmers see McDonald's coming down the line saying, you know, we're going to do cage-free eggs by 2025 or 2026. So they have to make those changes. So, you know, naturally everyone else follows suit.
But the idea of cage-free eggs, it's not really cage. I mean, we're not giving these, like, chickens the entire yard to run around in, are we?
No, we're not. We're not. It's just, you know, if you see the cages that they're in today, they can't even turn around, really, right? They're tiny. By moving to cage-free, they're still not, you know, they're not roaming around. They're still very confined here. It's just that it's not as tight of a cage as they were in before.
Is this just because people, the animal rights people have made their traction on this, and that they've convinced consumers that somehow these animals are being mistreated and that's bad for your food?
Yeah, I think so. Well, animal rights, I mean, clearly this was all brought about by the animal rights groups. And once the everyday consumer started seeing the pictures of these chickens who are inside these cages where they can barely turn around or can't turn around, I think that resonates with everyone. There's also sort of a health halo around cage-free eggs. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. And I don't know if that's scientifically proven out. But I think, you know, this, especially the millennials, this next generation of consumers, are very concerned about where their food comes from, and, you know, how the animals are treated. So it started by the animal rights groups, and now it's the general consumer is starting to demand this.
And that was my next question, is there any science that shows that these eggs are any better for you, or that they're any healthier, or that the chickens understand what's going on to them, you know, what's happening to them? Any science at all?
I wish I could answer that question, but I frankly do not know. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, and I don't either. And we talked to Orion Samuelson, who was our ag expert here, about this. And when you think about all of the food that these farmers and suppliers have to raise for the entire world, at some point there has to be sort of a lowering of the cage size, or they just can't continue to be cage-free and with now livestock and cattle graze-free or whatever you want to call it with them. There is going to be an issue here in the future, right? Or no?
You know, I'm not sure about that. If you, you know, I'm from a small town in Minnesota, and so there's a lot of available land. You know, I mean, there is plenty of room for more chicken barns, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. You know, I think the reason they went to cages in the first place is because, you know, it was more efficient, and you can control these animals a little bit better. I think there's plenty of room. You know, when you move over to beef, that's a different story. If you want to move all the free-range beef, there's not enough supply in the United States right now.
What kind of impact is this having on companies? Like a company like Mondelez, or now Target has decided to do this. Are they seeing a bump in their stock prices? Are they seeing profits go up when they do this and more?
No. This is just something they got to do. I mean, it's if they don't do it, or if they don't make a decision to do it, then they're going to be left behind. So this isn't, you know, if they make an announcement like this, it's doing nothing for their stock price. It's probably doing, you know, very little to their revenue. It's more or less a protection over, you know, being left behind.
And what it really does too is add to the cost to the farmers. You mentioned that earlier. The people who are raising these animals, there's going to be a real cost to them.
Sure, absolutely, and they're going to charge more to get it, you know, to sell those products as well. Mondelez, for example, you know, which just announced last week, I believe it was, that they were going cage-free by 2020 in the United States. They said that they're going to be helping the farmers, or helping the supply chain, to do that. So, you know, I think companies are incentivizing these farmers a little bit more, and the supply chain people, so that they're able to make the required investment to be able to, you know, meet the demand.
It is amazing how the impact that the animal rights groups have had on this, just by showing a couple of pictures of chickens that are skinny, skin and bones, and they're laying, you know, these eggs, and they're unhealthy. What kind of impact are they having, you know, on other areas?
Well, I think you're seeing it in beef with hogs. You know, hog confinement crates, that's been a huge issue for the animal rights groups, and that's changed. And, you know, you're seeing a lot of companies moving away from those gestation crates for the sows, so they have a little bit more room to roam. You're seeing it all throughout the food chain, though. It's not just animals. I mean, the animal rights groups, of course, are having this this huge impact on all of the meats, the proteins that were sold. But there's also a big movement going on the other side, you know, with crops and GMOs. And there's another one where the science isn't really proved out. Are GMOs really not good for you? I mean, who knows? There's no proven scientific evidence. It's just people see this thing and they say, well, it's a genetically modified organism, therefore it must not be good for me. It must, you know, it's quack science or whatever. There's just food in general right now. I think I mentioned this before, but the younger crowd, the people under age 35, are really concerned about where their food comes from. They want to know this. It's almost like a snapback from the last generation when everyone in the United States sort of ate a bunch of processed food, and they all got, you know, there's a lot of obesity, there's a lot of diabetes and other, and heart disease. And I think these millennials, this younger group, sees this, and they're snapping back to you know, a more traditional, older style of food, slow food, you know, clean ingredients, not processed, that sort of thing.
Anything that I missed that you want to jump in on?
No, I think we're good.
All right. The only other thing I was going to ask is, you know, along with those millennials, with what you just said, there's not an understanding of how the global food thing works. And with growing population, there has to be some give and take somewhere, right?
I mean, oh, yeah, definitely on the grain side. Yeah. I mean, on the protein side, it's a little bit different. I think there's a little more wiggle room there. But on the grain side, there's only so much field that you can farm.
Crane's Chicago business reporter Peter Frost with us on the opening bell this morning. You can find him on Twitter at Peter Frost. And that's our program for this morning. Our producer is Mary Sandberg. Our engineer is Ben Cortez. Production help from Ross Cochran and Kevin Powell. Have a great day. The Steve Cochran Show's next.